So there's a well-known Gemara that tells us that Mishenichas Adar Marib B'Mesimcha, that when Adar begins, there's a tremendous amount of joy. And the Gemara says, in a similar vein, that Mishenichas Av Mematin B'Simcha, we try to minimize the amount of joy that's there. So in light of this, the Gemara teaches us that if a person has a Din Torah, if a Din Torah, have to go to Bezdin or a secular court really with a non-Jew, so the Gemara tells us that a person should make sure to go in the right month, the proper month. There are certain months that are very appropriate to go to a Bezdin, and certain months are not so appropriate. So the Gemara says if one has a Din Torah with a non-Jew, a person should not go in the month of Av. Month of Av is a month that's a terrible mazel. It's going to be mazel ra, and therefore a person should avoid going to such a Din Torah. But if a person has a Din Torah during the month of Adar, then a person certainly should try to push off till Adar, because Adar is a month full of simcha, a month full of mazel tov. So that's what the Gemara basically says. Mazel ra is in the month of Av, and mazel tov is in the month of Adar. So this is a very strange thing, because we have a concept in halach in the Torah that we don't trust in witchcraft, we don't trust in superstition, we don't trust in strange things. We trust in what the Torah tells us, because there are certain days that are good, certain days that aren't good, certain months that are good, certain months that are not good. So we don't go based on that. We go based on logic. We don't follow any mazalos of certain times that are good. The black cat walks in front of you. You walk underneath the ladder. This is witchcraft. These are things that we don't go based on. You know, going to a din Torah, going to a court is actually pretty fun. I remember the first time I had jury duty a few months ago. So I was dreading it, absolutely dreading it. I brought my Gemara, planning to spend the whole day there. And finally, they call me to a case, and you never know what case you get until they ship you over to the room to get to the courthouse. And I'm learning a lot, and then finally they sent me in the back of the courtroom, and it's a case of a drug dealer. A person was accused of dealing drugs, and the one witness on the case was himself accused drug dealer, but he was testifying against the other guy to get himself out of jail. That was the case set up. But as I was watching this, I started to close my Gemara and started to pay attention, because it was actually pretty fascinating. The types of arguments that the lawyers were talking about and the judges and the different individuals, it was like learning Gemara, like this and that and this argument, that argument. But I really didn't want to stay the whole day. But the way it works, like the way your name is on the list, so you have no choice. So there was a guy in front of me, a frum guy, and so everyone says, if anyone can't make it the next few weeks, please come forward and let us know why. So a frum guy gets up and says, I'm a rabbi somewhere, and I can't make it because if there's a levaya, if there's a this, if there's a that. And the judge wasn't very pleased. He's like, so what happens if you can't go on vacation ever? You have to be around all day long? I figured out. And the judge was not very pleased with this rabbi, but he let him go. So I couldn't use that same excuse. So I said, once I was there, I may as well just enjoy it. So I enjoyed it. And then I said, I can't use that excuse. So they called me up. I'm on the stand, and they go around the 12 people who are up there. What's your name and what do you do for a profession? So I said, I'm a rabbi in a decent sized shul. The judge is like, wow, so you must be pretty busy. So why didn't you leave? I said, listen, I have a tremendous appreciation and gratitude for the state of New York and Nassau County. I need to show my Hakar Satov in English, my appreciation. So I figured I'd do my part. He said, that's very commendable. I hope you get a good drasha out of, get a story out for this drasha and a sermon. So in the end of the day, so one of the big questions was that, are you willing to be on a court? Are you comfortable with a convicted individual to be a witness for someone else? And I said, I can't. I can't trust such a person, because in the end of the day, he's just trying to get himself out of jail, so I wouldn't trust such a witness. So that puzzled me. I was disqualified, and I was able to go, but it was after like a full 10 hours in the courtroom, but it was fascinating. So that was my one experience in the courtroom. But it didn't happen in Adar, though. It didn't happen in Av either, but it was a one day, one in, one out, and Zehu. But the question becomes, are we allowed to go to a court in Adar versus Av? We don't go based on mazalos. We don't go based on times that are good, times that are bad. And this is not the only place we find in halacha that we have such a superstitious understanding of things. The Gemara says, the psak is that when a person gets married, you should try to get married in the first half of a month. Because there the moon is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's symbolic of something big and bracha. But in the second half of the month, we got married on Chaf. So, but okay, it's not the biggest deal. But the second half of the month, the moon gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch that a person should try, if possible, to get married the first half of the month. So how is that allowed? Isn't that some form of witchcraft and superstition? We have everyone. Everyone's table, Rosh Hashanah night, and some in the second night of Rosh Hashanah, have simanim. They have a table full of simanim. They have apple and honey, they have pomegranates, they have figs, and they have dates, and they have fish, and then they have gourd, and they have whatever else is there. Full of simanim. How is simanim allowed? How isn't that superstitious that I'm going to have a good year because I have an apple? I'm going to have a good year because I had a pomegranate, a date? So there are some who explain that, no, they're not superstitious. When I have an apple, it's not to say that it's going to give me a good year. It's just trying to inspire me to be confident I'm going to have a good year. But nothing's changing because I took a bite out of the apple, had some honey. It's just trying to inspire me. Others say the simanim are there simply for me to daven for a good year. Davening is a good thing. But not that by me eating it, me eating the pomegranate gives me a good year. It's just to inspire me to daven. But yet others say, no, it's good mazel. It's good mazel to have an apple on the night of Rosh Hashanah, to have a pomegranate, a date, a fish head, a sheep head, if you're so crazy. This is all supposed to be part of the simanim. Why is that not superstitious at all, to have these types of days, months, that are considered good mazel, and others that are considered bad mazel? So there's a fascinating opinion of the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer explains that these things are not considered superstitious. We have certain things that are part of nature. Coronavirus is part of nature right now. That's part of the science of what we're living through. That's not bad mazel. Maybe when the Black Plague came, they didn't understand how things worked. So maybe that was like superstition, witchcraft. Now we know how viruses travel. We know how bacteria travels. That's nature. Certain things are nature. Bacteria, virus, things grow, things die. That's part of nature. The Chassam Sofer explains the month of Av and the month of Adar is part of nature. Not that superstitious. It's been proven throughout history that the month of Av, terrible things happened to Klal Yisrael. We lost the two Bati Mikdash. And all the bad things that happened, the Mishnah lists five horrific things that we experienced in Av. That's not superstition. That's not mazel ra. That happens to be part of the nature of the world. There's certain, you know, places in the world which are dangerous, and there's certain times of the year that are dangerous. Now, we can't just guess because you walk underneath a ladder or walk in front of a black cat or, you know, glass, a mirror broke. That's just made up. But if it's been proven throughout Jewish history that that's what's going to happen in the month of Av or the month of Adar, that becomes part of the nature. We just don't know until we figure it out. We didn't know coronavirus until we figured it out. But once we figured it out, it wasn't people just getting sick. It was a virus that was traveling. So in time, there's also such a concept of a mazel ra and mazel tov. So how do you and I know which ones it is? We don't know. It's only whatever the Torah tells us, what the Chachamim teach us. I was in a fascinating conversation Friday night. We were in North Windermere for Shabbos, and we had a tish at someone's house. And there was a guy there who was asking me very, very deep philosophical questions about how halacha works. Halacha is a very confusing thing. What makes me decide that Rav Moshe Feinstein, we should pass like him, versus Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, versus Rav Yashif? What gives me the right? He was saying, I didn't make a psak. I just decided that we'll go like Rav Yashif. What was the basis for such a thing? He says, why can't I go around shopping for kulas? I want to live a very frum life, but I want to be lenient. I want to be able to have every kula in the book. What's wrong with that? We don't always paskin just like Rav Moshe Feinstein. We don't always paskin just like Rav Yashiv. We like pick and choose, don't we? So why can't I pick and choose all the kulas across the board? And he was a very, very intelligent individual, big philosopher. And we're going back and forth. It got a little bit heated. And in the end of the day, I said to him, it gets to a certain point where we can't really understand things. Sometimes it has to get to a point where you say, I just don't know the answer. It's a good question. I don't have a good answer for you. It's a very good question. I don't know. And he said that was the best answer he ever got, that sometimes you have to live in the place, I don't know. Rav Weinberg and I last night were talking at the dinner, and we spoke about the same idea, and we even shared the same exact story. Me in North Windermere and he in Esh Kodesh here about, I'm not sure who was here, about Beryl and the big vikuach and the big debate. Mamish, the same exact story. It happens often that we talk about the same things in different places. Remember the first year I was here in Esh Kodesh, so we're still living in Lawrence. So I walked in for the second night of Rosh Hashanah to speak here. So I spoke about a topic about how learning Torah is a form of tshuva, but little did I know, the night beforehand, when I wasn't here, Rav Weinberger spoke about the same exact topic, how learning Torah is a form of tshuva. So sometimes, Baruch Hashem, we're on the same wavelength, which is great, but it's a point of time that we just can't understand things. So as it's trying to explain to this individual, certain things are very scientific and systematic. Math, accounting, 1 + 1 = 2. There's no arguing on that. And then there's a world of art. Why do certain pictures become popular? Why are certain advertisements popular? There's no way to really explain it. There's no science to it. It's art. And there's some things that are somewhat mixed together. Music, there's theory behind music. There are rules to a certain extent of music. But then there's art. Like, I'm sure, you know, speaking to, we stayed at Mordechai Shapiro's house on Shabbos. So I said to him, I imagine there are certain songs that you thought were going to make it and really didn't make it. And there are probably some songs you didn't think were that good, but somehow everyone liked it. And he says, yeah, you can never know what's going to pick up. When it comes to art, who knows who's going to like it, who won't. You won't know until you test the market. So there's certain things in Psak Halacha. Yes, there are certain rules we have to follow. For example, if it's the Rabbim versus the Yachid. One rabbi says one thing, and all the other rabbis say something else. We always follow the Rabbim. We follow the majority. There are certain rules we have that if it's Rav and Shmuel are arguing, we follow like Rav most of the time. And sometimes we go like Shmuel. There are certain rules. But then there's certain things that are just based on art, if you will. There's no way to explain it. So, for example, the Gemara says that what bracha do we say when drinking water? So we all know the answer. But the Gemara wasn't sure at some point in time. Is it a shahakol nie bidvaro? Or maybe it's a borei nefashos. That's strange for us to think of such a question, but that was the question of the Gemara. And you know what the Gemara answers? You know what? We're not really sure. Poke, chazi, go out and see. My amadavar, what are the people doing? And whatever they're doing, that's what the halacha is. Forgetting what the halacha was, but whatever the practice has become, whatever the minhag has become, that's what sticks. So whatever music they put into, whatever music people are playing, that means that's what the people like. So there's a certain element of the rabbis having to make decisions, but sometimes things go beyond that. The clients don't make the decisions, who we should paskin like. And you have many cases like this. There's a Gemara that talks about one time Pesach is just a month from tomorrow, or the next day. And the Gemara once, it was Shabbos was Erev Pesach. So the halacha is that in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, you shech the Karban Pesach. So what happens if Erev Pesach is a Shabbos, though? You can't carry on Shabbos. There's no Erev. How do you bring the knife to the Beis HaMikdash to shech the sheep? So they asked the great Hillel HaZaken. And Hillel HaZaken says, I'm not really sure. You know what? If we're not Nevi'im, well, we're B'nai Nevi'im, we're the children of Nevi'im, let's see what they're going to do tomorrow. Let's watch Klai. So I'm sure they know what to do. So they just kind of waited back. They didn't make a decision. Let things take its course. And the next day, all the families of B'nai Israel took the knife, stuck it in the hair of the sheep, and the sheep schlepped the knife to the Beis HaMikdash. So sometimes we have that the art of halacha, the art of minhagim, override or decide what the halacha is. It's hard for us to explain. You can't explain it. It's a place of, I don't know. I don't know the answer to it. Now, when Yaakov Avinu was running away from Esav, so he fell asleep on the Makom HaMikdash. And when he landed and sleeping in Makom HaMikdash, he had said, you know, he realized Hashem lives in this place. Hashem is resting in this place. I didn't realize this. And the Pasuk says, Achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. There's Hashem in this place. Va'anochi lo yadati. I didn't know Hashem was resting in this place. So Rav Shamshin Miash Shapoli explained as follows. He was right below the Kisei HaKavod. The Kisei HaKavod of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was flying, hovering above him. And there are four legs of the Kisei HaKavod. A chair has four legs. And the Gemara says there's a different image on each of the four legs of the Kisei HaKavod. So he said, Achein. I knew about Achein. Achein Yesh Hashem. Achein stands for Aryeh. Aleph is Aryeh. Chaf is Kruv. And Nun is a Nesher. I knew that there was a face of a lion in Aryeh. I knew there was a Kruv, a face of a baby. I knew there's a face of a Nesher, an eagle. Those I knew. Achein Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. I didn't know I was the fourth face. The Gemara says the fourth face was Yaakov Avinu. And he didn't know he was the fourth face until he slept below the Kisei HaKavod. And the word Anochi is Aleph is Aryeh, Nun is Nesher, Chaf is Kruv, and Yud is Yaakov. He was a fourth. He didn't realize that. When a person gets to a position of Anochi Liadati, where he's able to realize that, I don't know the answer to everything. I don't know the answer to how halacha works, to how superstition works, how mazel works. That's when a person gets to the highest level. He realizes he actually touches the Kisa Kavod. It's from the place of humility that's able to really propel a person to godliness, to greatness. In fact, there's even another Gemara that says it wasn't Yaakov Avinu's face who was on the Kisa Kavod. It was Adam HaRishon. So who was it? Was it Adam or was it Yaakov? So the Gemara says that Yaakov actually looked like Adam. They looked like each other. So they look similar. Who was it? Adam, Yaakov, they looked very similar. But I want to suggest that that fourth leg wasn't Adam, wasn't Yaakov. It was a mirror. And when the Gemara says Adam was the fourth leg, it was actually a lowercase aleph. Not Adam HaRishon. It was man. It was a mirror. Any man or woman who look up at that fourth leg, they see themselves. When a person realizes how low and how humble they are, to a place of Anochi Liadati, that's going to propel them to the reaching of the Kisa Kavod, that their face is also embedded on the fourth leg of the Kisa Kavod. So that's that place of, we don't know how it works. We don't know how superstition works. We don't know how mazel works. We don't know which days are good, which days are bad. But all we can do is just trust in what halacha tells us. There's a great mice of the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav was known as an incredible Eloi as a young boy. So much so that when he would come home to his house, he would climb through the window, and not because he was trying to sneak in doing something wrong, chas v'shalom, because they had a one-room house in Brisk. So when he'd come in, his father, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, was sitting in the front learning. When his son would walk in, Rav Chaim would stand up for him. So the Brisker Rav was very, very uncomfortable with his father standing up for him. Rav Chaim was no slouch either. So Rav Chaim stood up for the Brisker Rav, he snuck in through the window in the back. So he was known as a young, young Eloi. Now, he was appointed to be a dayan in Brisk at a young age. And when he got to the Beis Din, so everyone was very, very curious to see what type of contribution he's going to have to the Din Torah, because his mind worked like no one else's mind. So there are these two elderly dayanim sitting on the Beis Din. And then there's a young Brisker Rav. So they were very nervous. They're older. They're experienced. But like, this young guy's going to just like crush us. So they're like talking about a certain case came. The two older dayanim are talking, and they're looking from the side of the corner of the eye to see what the Brisker Rav is going to respond, what he's going to argue. And he didn't say a thing. And they turn to the Brisker Rav and says, is there something you want to share? Any thoughts? And he shrugged his shoulders and says, no, I don't know anything. Nothing to say. This repeated itself for the second and the third case. So they finally turn to the Brisker Rav and they said, I don't understand. You are the Brisker Rav, the known Eloi of Brisk. How come you have nothing to contribute? And he said as follows. In order to be a dayan, you have to be willing to say the words, I don't know. I needed to establish a chazaka, that three cases that I could say, I don't know, now that becomes part of my arsenal. That becomes part of my language, and now I'm prepared to be a dayan. If you ever encounter a great leader, whether it be a rabbi, a posek, a dayan, who never says, I don't know, unless he's Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Rav Schechter, of that caliber, I wouldn't trust such a person. You have to be able to say, I don't know sometimes, oftentimes. The Gemara itself says, you should get comfortable saying the words, I don't know the answer. It's fine not to know the answer. I'll get back to you later. But that's part of greatness about saying, I don't know. So yes, we don't know how these things work. It's in a different world beyond us, a mazel tov, a mazel ra, the month of Adar, or in the month of Av. But we do find fascinating things. We had the other day, the mezuzah, how the mezuzah works. It's a strange thing. I heard actually a pretty funny story that from Rabbi Billet. I didn't hear it directly from him, but someone came to me and says, listen, what am I going to do this year? The Pesach program I'm going to is canceled. What in the world am I going to do? How am I going to make Pesach this year? He says, oh, you should really check your mezuzahs. He's obviously joking, like maybe you never have to make Pesach for 1 year. So the checking mezuzahs is it's an Indian. No one should belittle it. We had a friend a couple weeks ago. Their daughter couldn't sleep for like a series of several weeks. She just couldn't. She was going to sleep, waking up in the middle of the night, night after night, 3 o'clock in the morning. They couldn't figure it out. Taking to this doctor and that doctor, a sleeping doctor, a pediatrician. No one could figure it out. Finally, they said, "Okay, let's check the mezuzahs." And they checked the mezuzahs, and there was something wrong in her mezuzah on her bedroom. And they fixed it. And then that night she went to sleep perfectly. So we don't know how these things work. I have a friend in Eretz Israel, my father's friend, Gellis. So in their building, for a series of years, just girls were being born to every single family in that building. His first 8 kids are girls. They were checking the mezuzah in the front entrance to that building, and the word Livanecha was missing. And they fixed it, and then his youngest 2 kids are now boys. So how these things are, it's crazy. But I don't know how it works. It's a world beyond our understanding, but this is a world, Baruch Hashem, we live in. We just can't understand it, but we know it's true. There's a Gerul Hagra. There's a famous Gerul Hagra, how that works, I don't know, but certain chumashim, you could open up and flip the pages, and you could point to a pasuk, and that tells you some type of nevuah. There's actually a Gemara that talks about this. The Gemara says that the different Amoraim will look for signs from different things. So, for example, Shmuel would open up a sefer and point, and whatever told him, that was a sign what he should do. Others would look at if they had if the transportation was pretty simple, if they're trying to make a boat ride and the boat was delayed, it took it as a sign we shouldn't take it. But if the boat was on time, it was a sign they should go. And another opinion says he would go to a young child and say, tell me a pasuk. And the pasuk that he would say, that would be an indicator to do something or not do something. So we have these various superstitious things that the Gemara itself talks about. I remember my grandmother was a Niftaris a few months back. And I was Zocha to be Yorish from her, really, my Saba, a set of Shas from my grandfather's grandfather from 1880. So the morning of her Levaya, so I had 2 of the Gemaras at the time. The whole set was given to me, but I didn't take it from my grandmother until after she passed away a few months ago. But my grandfather had given me a Masechah Shabbos and a Masechah Schulim. Those 2 I had in my house already. So Masechah Schulim, that Gemara, is where this Gemara appears, which I just told you, where they check the sefer for a sign, or you check the transportation. So I said, you know what? In the morning of the Levaya, let me open up my Gemara Chulim and just open up and point to a pasuk and see what it says. So it says something about shechting an animal dying. So that was like the message I had the day my grandmother died. It wasn't so crazy because Masechah Chulin talks about shechting animals all the time. So statistically, it wasn't such a crazy thing. But these things do exist in the Gemara. It sounds superstitious. So when do we say it's superstitious? When do we say it's not superstitious? I don't have the answer. There really is no answer. But whatever appears in the Gemara, that much we could accept. And what doesn't, we really shouldn't take on. You know, one of the superstitious things people do, it's really probably an American minhag, is making wishes when blowing out the candles for a birthday. Is that such a thing a person should do? Make a wish. Is a birthday cake even something that's appropriate? What about birthday candles? So Rav Blumenkranz Zatzal, and he has this Pesach Digest book. So in the back he has various different topics he addresses. He actually thinks it's a problem of Chukas Akum, non-Jewish custom, to have birthday cakes. Why? What's the basis of a birthday cake? He says, based on some Greek myths, that the cake is supposed to be a moon, and the candles are supposed to be the stars, and it's somehow an offering to the moon and star gods. That's what the birthday cake is. So he says it's usher to have birthday cakes. I asked Rav Schechter about this once, and he thought that was not correct. A birthday cake is just a nice way to celebrate. People like dessert, kids like desserts, adults like desserts. And with the candles, it's just a nice way to celebrate with candles. Oftentimes, people have candles walking down to the chuppah. Candles are a very nice way to celebrate. So he felt that there was no problem in celebrating a birthday with birthday cakes and with candles. But what about blowing out and making wishes? So making wishes, that's a strange thing. But giving brachas is a very powerful thing. The Gemara tells us that Chazal teach us that we have a certain koach, a certain strength a person has on their birthday. So giving out brachas is such a concept to give out brachas, especially on your birthday. But what about blowing out the candles? Something to do with that? Any issue with that? So the truth is, there are 2 reasons why a person should not blow out candles. Not only a birthday candle, but even a regular candle. What's the reason? So the Stipler explains that when the sound a person makes when blowing something out, that's apparently a name of a malach. The malach is whatever that sound is, that's the name of a malach, and we don't want to try to, when you say the name of a malach, you're invigorating the malach, you're somehow giving energy to the malach. We don't know how malachim work, so we try to avoid saying names of malachim. That's one reason. And the other reason why is because the pasuk tells us that a person's neshama is compared to a candle. So we don't chas v'shem want to blow out a neshama. So blowing out a candle might be comparable to blowing out a neshama. So that's why many have the practice not to blow out candles in general for those two reasons. That being said, Rav Avadia Yosef says, those who don't know, now you guys do know, but had you not known, it wouldn't be an issue because you don't know it. So those who don't know, nothing to worry about. But those who do know, it's a nice practice to avoid it. So how do you put out candles? So I just use my fingers and just kind of crush it. That's one way. It doesn't hurt, really. If you do it quick enough, it's fine. Or you could kind of shake it out, maybe. If you have Havdalah candle. But it's you'll see here in the shul, they'll never blow out candles. They always just like, you know, use their fingers and just suffocate the flame. And that's how they usually get rid of it. But there's such an Indian. But this is that superstition? Is it not superstition? So again, it's brought down in by the post. It's brought down in Chazal, and therefore we have to accept it, even though it may not be fully comprehensible to us. Just yesterday, I gave a whole shiur how to memorize Gemara, how to memorize anything. And it's a fascinating topic. There's a great program out there for those husbands who are learning Daf Yomi. It's really fantastic. But there is a segula for helping one's memory. So it's a very strange segula, but it's brought down by the great Arizal. What's a segula? So if you want to have a perfect memory, I wouldn't try this at home. You should fast for 3 days and three nights straight. That means 72 hours without eating at all. Okay? Then, no eating, no drinking. And then you can write down, I'll tell you the second, the backup type, which might be a little bit easier. But you do that for 3 days straight. And then the Rizal says you put some wine, a glass cup, covered into the Aron Kodesh. Okay? And then Friday night you take it out, and you make Kiddush from that cup, and then Havdalah, you use it as well. That's the segula. It's not to make fun. It's beyond my understanding. It's brought down by the Rizal, so that means it works and it's serious. So that's something that would not be, I would not suggest. But other poskim say, if you want to try something, so then you could try to, instead of fasting for 3 days, take a tainis divur. Don't speak for 3 days and three nights. That's something we can do. It's challenging, but something that a person could do. So that's a segula. It exists. I'm not encouraging a person to do that. There are other ways to work on memory techniques, but it exists. The Rizal says it. It works. It works. So some things are segulas. Some things we understand. Some things we don't understand. Rav Yashiv was once told, he was a sandik at his great-great-great-grandson or something. He saw 6 generations. He was 100 and something. So the mole went over to him jokingly, I don't know how you're able to joke with Rav Yashiv, but he says, it's a segula to be an Olam Haba, to be the sandik for your great-great-grandson. So obviously, Rav Yashiv didn't need that to get into Olam Haba, but that's apparently a segula. If you were able to see your 6th-generation grand-grandson, you're good to go. So Rav Yashiv's response back was, though, I don't want to go through the back door. I want to go through the front door. There's such a thing as segulas. Yes, all these things work, whatever is brought down and deemed acceptable by Chazal, and it's a back door into the Olam Haba. But there's also a front door into Olam Haba. Do you want to sneak into the back window, or do you want to come straight through? The Rambam is very, very strong in his language when he talks about different types of witchcraft and superstition. The Rambam writes in a very, very strong way as follows. He says, "Hadvarim elu, all these types of superstitions, kulan divrei sheker v'chazav heim. They're all fake, false nonsense. V'hein shehitu behena ovdik avodah zarah. The worshippers of idol worshippers, they're the ones who's tricked us. L'goy haratos, to convince the entire world that they should be doing these things. V'ein roi l'Yisrael shein chachamim m'chuchamim. It's not worthy of us. The Jewish people were smart people. L'hamshech b'havalim elu, to be involved in such superstition." Not to think even twice, once, that such a thing actually works. Those who trust in them, things that are similar, thinks in his mind. You think it actually works? The Torah prohibits any form of superstition. The Rambam doesn't bring anywhere about, he doesn't bring Simanim of Rosh Hashanah. He doesn't bring about the Chodesh Av, Chodesh Adar. These things do work, because the Gemara tells us, but the Rambam thinks, just stay far away. Even for those that work, best to have just a very straight approach trust in the Kadosh Baruch Hu, follow the Torah, follow the Halacha, that's the best person he should do. Aval Bali Chachma, those who have wisdom, Utmimi Adas, have a pure mind, Yadu Berayos Brus, they know with full proof, Shekol Elu Dvarm Sheasu Torah, the Torah asks them. And that's how a person should act. We have to be completely pure, Tamim Tihiyah Imam Hashem Lokecha, not to look for these strange things, even though some might actually work. So the understanding is that with Amalek, you know, Amalek, we find this interesting thing, that everything about Amalek is half-baked. The Pasuk tells us that as long as Amalek is in this world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kiseh is not full, it's not complete. Al kase ka, the Pasuk says. The case, the kiseh of Hashem, is only chaf samach, it's missing an aleph. Hashem's name is only yud hey, it's missing the vav hey. Hashem's name is split in half. Everything about Adar and Purim is split in half. Sometimes we have 2 months where there's Adar Aleph, Adar Beit. It's split in half. We have a Machzeh Shekel, which is split in half. We have, what else do we have that Megillah, according to the Gemara, can be read on day 11, day 12, day 13, day 14, day 15, the Gemara says. We only do 14 and 15, but in theory, we read on day 11 to day 15. When else do you have like options to read days? Because whenever a Malik is there, there's some type of division that takes place. In fact, the Gematria Yudhei, versus Vavheh, Yudhei is 15, Vavheh is 11, 11 to 15 is when the Megillah is read, because there's a split with Amalek. Amalek's Gematria is 240, Shkalim is 480, it's twice of that. When we give a Machzeh Shekel, there's an inyan to give Machzeh Shekel today on Tainus Tzibur, it's to complete the other half, to make everything whole. So what's the Yudhei and the Vavheh? The Yudhei exists, the Vavheh doesn't, we're trying to fit the Vavheh back in. So the pasuk is Yismuchu Hashemayim v'sagel haaretz. Yismuchu Hashemayim is Yud Hei. Hashemayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is intact. V'sagel haaretz, down here, the joy in this world doesn't exist. We need to put the joy back in to put the Vav Hei v'sagel haaretz. Purim and Machzeh Shekel is about completing that other half. What it means to complete that other half in this world is not to follow the mazal, not to follow the mazalos of Adar, not to follow the mazalos of Av. But to be in this world, live in this world according to Torah and Halacha, to the way Chachamim decide how we paskin, to the minhagim we have in this world, that's v'sagel ha'aretz. And when we're able to do that in this world, then we're able to piece back together Kadosh Baruch Hu's full name to Yismuchu Hashemayim v'sagel ha'aretz. We down here, the Chachamim, have the ability to create the reality. There's an incredible ma'isa. There was an individual who was very, very ill. He was dying. And he had some issue with his lung, some puncture in the lung. And he was at his last breath. And he asked Rav Yashiv what he should do. Rav Yashiv says, come to Eretz Yisrael and you'll live. Why? Because there's a certain treif in an animal, a certain puncture in the lung, that the poskim in Chutzlartz say that animal is going to die. It's a treif animal. And a treif animal means it won't live beyond 12 months. So there's certain punctures in the lung which will indicate it can't live for more than 12 months. So this particular puncture that this guy had, according to poskim in Chutzlart, if an animal had it, that would make the animal treif and couldn't live for 12 months. But the poskim in Eretz Yisrael paskin, that hole, that puncture won't make an animal treif. An animal can live. So there's a different psakin where you lived. Vayashu says, come to Eretz Yisrael where we paskin an animal can live with a puncture and you'll live, and that's taka what happened. Because the Chachamim v'Sagel Haaretz have the ability to decide how reality actually works. So even though there's mazalos, the Gemara says, Ein mazal Yisrael, we are beyond. Chachamim were given the Torah to decide, Lo b'shemayim. We have the ability to make decisions how life works. So I'll finish off with one last ma'isa, where I was not quite in court, but when my daughter Yocheved was born, she was born in January, I was learning in YU. And I got the call. And I'm not known to rush to the hospital immediately. I'm known to take my time. Things don't happen so fast. So I'm driving back from YU. I parked in, I was going through Queens, and there was a stop sign. Those who know the area along the Van Wyck, I forgot the side road, but there's some side road there. There's like a left turn, there's a stop sign, and I kind of like, you know, did a slow bob through the stop sign, you know, to get to the hospital. So there was a cop who was just waiting, pulling people over one after the next, and before I could even explain myself, my wife was going to labor, he just wrote up a ticket and handed it to me and just I left. Now, she didn't have the baby till Friday, the next day. This was a Thursday. But either way, I wanted to fight the ticket. So I didn't know if I'd get it because it was the baby was born the day after when I was rushing to the hospital. So I scheduled, I appealed the ticket. And lo and behold, the court date was on today, Yud Gimel of Adar. So this is the Gemara. If you want to go to the court with a non-Jew, Adar is the best day. Tainis Esther, what better day than that? So I go to the DMV down by the down Rockaway Turnpike, and it's me and a bunch of immigrants, pretty much. Those were at the dinner last night, a great line by Eitan Agenzo. You saw that line? You missed that. It was a great line. So Ephraim Nunman and Jessica Nunman got honored last night. They're both Chilean. So Eitan Agenzo was a young guy who had moved to the community. His first job is here. He saw Ephraim Nunman, bringing around the Mayim Achronim and Shal Shudis. So he says, are they already found you the Spanish guy around here? They're making you work so hard? So that was on the video last night. So it was me and a number of Dominicans and whatever. There's one cop that was present. Now, the way it works, to my understanding, is if your cop is in there who gave you the ticket, you get a free, that's it. If your officer is there, so you have to go stand in front of the judge and debate him. So I don't remember. I thought he was maybe the guy for me. So you start calling down the list of, Alex Rodriguez or whoever the names are. They're all like, every guy's left. He goes, okay, Yonatan Levin. And then the officer, of course, is my officer. So to me, standing there in a suit, I've got my briefcase, I got my files, my wife gave birth the next day, and the cop standing looking at me, he's like, oh, just get out of here. He didn't want to debate with me. He obviously saw I came prepared, somewhat intelligent, I guess, and he just let me go. So that was the mazel I had on Adar. So yes, we should trust in the mazels that the Gemara tells us, and trust in the Siman Rosh Hashanah, and trust all those good things we know. But we shouldn't only rely on the mazalos and superstitions. We should trust in following HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Torah and the Halacha and put together back Yismichu HaShemayim v'Sagei El Haaretz.